Hello, and welcome back to our Global TechSmart podcast. In this episode, we're being joined by Chelsea Thomas, Executive Director and Resident Trade Expert here at ACT The App Association, for a digital trade and global competition update. We'll discuss some DMA-related actions in the EU and highlight how digital trade issues in the United States could impact small business entrepreneurs everywhere. But before we get to that, we have our host and friendly global podcast team here today. Hey, Brad.
Why, hello there.
Why, hello. Caitlin, what's up?
I am membership chillin', as usual.
Love it. Love to hear it. And of course, I'm Alex. So before Chelsea joins us, we're going to talk tech history and the top global tech headlines. In celebration of International Women's Day and Women's History Month in the US and UK, we're recognizing the accomplishments of the mother of the internet, Radia Perlman. Radia invented the Spanning Tree Protocol, STP, which is crucial for network bridges operation. Her work has been fundamental in making today's internet possible. She has received numerous awards and honors for her contributions to computer science and technology, including induction into the National Inventors Hall of Fame and the Internet Hall of Fame. Radia Perlman's work continues to influence networking and security. Her protocols and algorithms are fundamental building blocks in today's internet and network architecture. Her career serves as an inspiration to women in STEM, showcasing the significant impact one individual can have on the technology that powers our world. And the rest is tech history. And now on to Bites and Brews. Brad and Caitlin, what has been happening in the news?
Senators Richard Blumenthal and Marsha Blackburn have requested the declassification of information regarding TikTok's national security risks. This move follows classified briefings that raise concerns about the app's connections to the Chinese government. The U.S. House has passed a bill requiring TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, to divest from the app or face a ban. With the Senate now considering the legislation, Senate Intelligence Committee Chair Mark Warner also expressed a desire to make the risks public following a persuasive briefing to lawmakers.
The European Union's Parliament has passed the world's first comprehensive AI regulation, categorizing artificial intelligence technologies by risk level from unacceptable to low hazard, with implementation starting in 2025. The EU AI Act aims to balance innovation with fundamental rights protection amidst concerns about rapid tech evolution and its potential obsolescence. The landmark regulation signals a shift towards more stringent governance when it comes to AI, setting a potential precedent for global artificial intelligence policy while addressing the urgent need for oversight in the face of AI's rapid advancement and its societal impacts.
As the EU advances its Artificial Intelligence Act, the UK charts its own path with Lord Holmes' AI regulation bill, emphasizing transparency, public trust, and innovation. The bill, receiving broad support in the House of Lords, proposes an AI authority to coordinate sector-wide standards and mandates AI officers in organizations to ensure ethical AI use. Following its second reading, the bill faces further legislative scrutiny, with committee reviews and debates in both houses of parliament shaping its future. Advocacy and public engagement will be crucial to its progression and potential enactment amidst government hesitancy.
And the European Union has launched investigations into Apple, Google, and Meta under the new Digital Markets Act, probing potential breaches that could lead to significant fines. The law, designated to limit the tech giants' power and foster competition, mandates easier user transitions between services and claims to offer more choices in apps and browsers. While tech companies have made adjustments to comply with the DMA, the European Commission suspects their efforts might be insufficient, focusing on issues like Apple's app uninstallation process and Google search engine practices. Additionally, concerns about the new fee structures introduced by Apple and Alphabet and Meta subscription service compliance have been raised. We're going to talk more about the DMA and its effect on small businesses with Chelsea later.
And that's all for What's Brewing. As I mentioned earlier, we're being joined by Chelsea Thomas, Executive Director of ACTV App Association, for a digital trade and global competition update. Hey, Chels.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. You haven't been on the pod in a minute, so it's nice to have you back.
I know, I feel like a stranger here.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's just jump into it then. Mergers, acquisitions, and competition in the U.S. and EU. So how do the current merger scrutiny and competition practices in the U.S. and EU affect small businesses' growth strategies, particularly the strategies for our members?
Well, right now in the U.S., the FTC is considering some proposed updates to merger rules through the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act, or HSR Act, which requires pre-merger notifications for large transactions to the FTC and DOJ. The goal is to review potential mergers or acquisitions that might significantly impede competition. But we have serious concerns about the FTC's proposed updates to the HSR merger notification rule. As they stand, these updates seem to overlook the specific impacts on small business. The FTC's failure to provide a factual basis for its assertion that the rule changes would not significantly impact small businesses, as required by the Regulatory Flexibility Act, or RFA, is a cause for concern. This oversight suggests a disconnect in understanding the broader implications of such regulatory changes on smaller entities. Small businesses are concerned that the revised HSR rules could pose substantial burdens. While intended to curb the dominance of large entities, such regulatory measures could inadvertently stifle growth and innovation among small businesses. It's important to note that small businesses often see mergers as crucial parts of their growth or exit strategies. However, increased scrutiny can limit these opportunities, potentially stifling innovation. We need to find a balance and differentiate between acquisitions that harm competition or consumers and those that enable small businesses to scale, innovate, and benefit consumers. The importance of regulatory clarity and predictability cannot be overstated. It is not just a matter of convenience, but a crucial factor for small businesses and the VCs who invest in them to make informed decisions and strategies for growth or partnership. As Morgan frequently says, a barrier to exit is a barrier to entry, and that is a substantial fear that we're looking at as part of these HSR modifications. As far as what we're seeing in the EU with competition and the Digital Markets Act, or the DMA, we're seeing, so to go back a bit, the DMA is a significant piece of legislation in the EU that aims to curb the power of big tech companies and foster fair competition. That's sort of its stated goal. And in doing that, it's requiring large tech platforms to adhere to a set of new rules intended to promote competition and innovation. The DMA directly targets major tech companies, requiring changes in their operational practices, particularly affecting app stores and digital markets. These changes include allowing third-party app stores and preventing the favoring of their own services over those of competitors. While aimed at big tech, the DMA's ripple effects concern small businesses, particularly app developers and digital service providers. We are worried about how these changes will shift the cost structures within app stores, potentially impacting small developers. We've seen a mixed reaction from small businesses and developers, with most adopting a wait-and-see approach to understanding the full implications of the DMA. We and our small business members are watching to see if the DMA will actually level the playing field or introduce new barriers to entry and operation.
So kind of pulling on that same thread of barriers to entry and operation, I kind of want to help our listeners understand some of the barriers associated with digital trade and global competition, particularly those that are related to the FTC merger actions in the US and the consequences of the DMA in the EU. In what ways do these kinds of digital trade and competition policies pose barriers for small businesses engaging in international markets?
It's a great question. I think that we see it in six key ways. And I think that an overarching theme is that these regulations are meant to target big companies. But what we frequently see is that small businesses, when they are an after effect or an afterthought, they suffer those consequences exponentially compared to their, you know, big business relatives. So we're talking about, first, increased compliance burdens. Small businesses may face heightened compliance costs and administrative burdens due to the HSR rule and the DMA, potentially diverting resources from innovation and growth. And these are companies that do not have money for a full compliance department. So that means that one of their FTEs is focusing their time and energy on compliance as opposed to other ways to make their product great. In addition, the complexity and scope of these regulations can be particularly challenging for small businesses that lack those legal and financial resources of larger corporations. The second key way is with uncertainty and market instability. The evolving nature of the FTC's merger scrutiny and the implementation of DMA can create market uncertainty, making it difficult for small businesses to plan and make informed strategic decisions. Changes and ambiguities in policy enforcement can lead to market unpredictability, affecting small businesses' ability to effectively compete and engage in digital trade. And unpredictability is just another word for cost, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't know what is going to happen in your market, it's costing you, it's either costing you in time or money. But either way, you're paying. Third, limited market access and growth opportunities. Going back to the idea that barriers to exit are barriers to entry, with the FTC's stringent approach to mergers, that means that we're limiting exit opportunities for small business owners, potentially impacting their growth strategies and long-term viability. And on the DMA, the strict rules might inadvertently constrain small businesses' ability to scale or innovate if the market becomes overly segmented or if compliance restricts operational flexibility. Fourth, barriers to entry and expansion. Newer expanding small businesses might find it challenging to enter or grow in the digital market due to the regulatory barriers and the dominance of established players, further exacerbated by strict regulations. The regulatory focus on large platforms could inadvertently or vertently raise entry barriers for small businesses, as those platforms may become less inclined to collaborate with or acquire smaller entities due to regulatory risks. Fifth, resource allocation. The need to allocate significant resources to understand and comply with the regulations can detract from other critical areas like product development, customer acquisition, and market expansion. Smaller firms might need to hire external consultants or legal experts to navigate these regulations, representing a significant cost that larger firms can more easily absorb. And finally, the impact on innovation. The regulatory environment shaped by the FTC's actions and the DMA could stifle innovation, particularly if small businesses scale back on research and development investments due to regulatory uncertainties or compliance costs. Fear of potential future regulatory changes or actions can lead to a more cautious approach to innovation, possibly slowing down the pace of technological advancements in smaller firms.
So, thinking about how our global members navigate the ongoing transatlantic regulatory divide, what strategies should small businesses adopt to effectively navigate these differences between the U.S. and EU?
Well, Brad, I've got great news for you.
Love it.
We work at the App Association, and we help to provide this information to our member companies and small businesses globally, so that we can work with them so that they are able to effectively tell their own stories. Collective advocacy efforts can amplify the voice of small businesses, driving policy changes that foster a healthy, competitive, and innovative business ecosystem. Small businesses can amplify their voice in policy discussions by engaging in trade associations and advocacy groups like the App Association, ensuring that their interests are represented. Collaboration with other small businesses through orgs like ours could enhance bargaining power and resource sharing. And collaboration can bridge the gap between small businesses and policymakers, ensuring that regulations support rather than hinder business innovation and growth.
So what do we and what do our members need from global policymakers when it comes to digital trade and global competition?
Well, we need a few different things. We need transparency, we need clarity, we need balanced approach. And all of this is, to get back to the cost of uncertainty, these are things that can provide certainty. So in the United States, our members need a balanced approach to merger reviews. That means a more nuanced approach from the FTC, ensuring that small businesses' growth and opportunities are not stifled by overly stringent regulations intended for far larger entities. We also need transparency and clarity in how the FTC's rules apply to businesses of different sizes, preventing unnecessary burdens on smaller firms. In the EU, our members need protection against unintended consequences. The call for impact assessments to understand how new regulations, like those proposed under the DMA, might inadvertently affect small businesses, ensuring that measures meant to curb large tech firms' dominance don't harm smaller competitors. And our members seek policies that support and promote global trade, reducing barriers and fostering a digital environment where small businesses can thrive alongside larger companies. We hope to see a push for international cooperation to ensure that digital trade policies are harmonized or at least compatible across borders to facilitate smoother operations for businesses engaged in global commerce. And we urge U.S. regulators to stay engaged in those conversations and not step away from the table, ceding their voice in these negotiations.
Absolutely. So before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with when it comes to these issues? You know, whether it's what the FTC is doing, what the EU is doing, you know, final thoughts.
Sure. I think that these policies, when you look at them, your eyes can kind of glaze over, but they all have very significant and practical effects to small businesses. And that's why it's important to be educated and to be willing to share your story with regulators so that they are not regulating and drafting policy in a vacuum. Policymaking is built on storytellers and storytelling and finding ways to build a climate that is hospitable to small businesses. And that's why the work that we do here is exciting and important, and I am glad to get to talk a little bit about it.
A stranger no more.
A stranger no more.
We're so happy to have you join us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And now it's time for Random Identifier. Brad, you're up first.
All right, another band. We, Caitlin and I, and a couple other members of ACT, just got back from South by Southwest, which is a wonderful place for technology, but it also happens to be a fun place to listen to some good music. One of those bands we got to hear, West 22nd. I've listened to them for a little while, but they're super local to Austin, go to University of Texas, so never have toured out this way, but they're quite good. Little Southern rock, I suppose. Good voice, good guitars, can't complain.
Nice. Did you also enjoy seeing them, Caitlin?
They were fine. The thing is that the venue was, like, not great for them, so their sound wasn't great. They did a cover of a Tyler Childers song that I loved. Loved that. I think if I would have gone to the second show that Brad went to, I probably would have liked him a little bit more. But I was like, it's not like I didn't like them, but I wasn't like, hell yeah, turn it up.
Yeah.
The reason I went to the second show is because the first show was in the worst place ever.
Oh, cool.
And the sound was horrible. Great. So it was like, I refuse to believe that's what they sound like live. Yeah. So I don't blame you, Caitlin.
Yeah. And I listened to them on, like, Spotify or whatever, and I was like, oh, this sounds great. But, like, at the show, I was like, get me out of here.
It wasn't working.
My dogs were barking.
It was also late.
Yeah.
Very late.
Yeah, for sure. South by, so it's like, already you're exhausted. You're at South by.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. Well, aside from that glowing recommendation, they are good.
They are. No. They are.
Yeah.
I just had to be honest. I couldn't lie. Yeah.
Don't see them at that one venue.
At that one specific venue.
At Quattro Gatto.
Yeah. Tiny place.
Yeah.
Tiny place.
Caitlin, what about you? What do you have for us?
Okay. I have just started rewatching Desperate Housewives.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm making Sam watch it. He's never watched it. And it's wild. Wild. First of all, the show came out in 2004.
That's crazy.
Right? Wild. That's crazy to think it came out 20 years ago. I remember not being allowed to watch it and my parents watching it. And, like, I always wanted to watch it. So now I finally, maybe I'm reliving my dream. Because I started, like, the first season several years ago and then never finished it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it's 20 years old. The clothes are starting to come back. Some of them, I still am like, that's so hideous. But, like, I know the girlies are wearing it. So, like, let's give it a go.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. It's very dramatic. Clothes are wild. What they think is acceptable to, like, joke about is also really interesting to see, you know?
It is definitely a show of its time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know this. It won like Emmys and Golden Globes and stuff like that. So I just had no idea. I think I kind of thought it was a joke. So
I know nothing about it at all.
Well, if you like Terry Hatcher.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was like Felicity.
Felicity Huffman. Yeah. Eva Longoria.
That was like her big intro into. Yeah, and the guy from John Tucker Must Die.
Oh, yes, and he's having an affair with Eva Longoria's character. Oh, wow. My gosh.
I remember watching that show. I think I was
sick. It's good.
Yeah, I was like 14, so I feel like I was just old enough that my mom would let me watch with her. Yep. She was going to watch no matter what, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I wasn't quite old enough. I was like 11 or 12 when it came out. And my dad also did this thing where he would Google like movies that were PG-13 that I wanted to see. And he would look up, what was it called? It was like Catholic movie reviews or something like that. And so if it was like too racy, I couldn't watch it. Oh, and Desperate Housewives is super racy. Like a lot of sexual themes that aren't super appropriate for maybe an 11 or 12 year old. So
that's
I get it.
That's fair. Desperate Housewives. Desperate indeed.
Despo.
Uh-huh. well, my... what I'm here to talk about today is a show, it's called Animal Control, and it's like yet another workplace comedy, but about a bunch of people who work for like Animal Control in Seattle, and it's actually delightful. It's like, it's good vibes, cute animals, funny storylines, 20-minute episodes, which is really
easy.
I'm doing right now, because it's either, like, I'm really like in a reading moment, and so it's like I want a couple of like episodes while I'm like eating or something, or like doing other things, and then I want to sit down and read. And it's been really great, and I just finished the first season. It's only 12 episodes, and I left. I did.
Unrelated, but related.
Yeah.
Do you need to queue up the TV and show before you sit down with the meal, or do you eat the meal and search?
The latter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Unless I know what I'm going to watch.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, like,
I respect that. I wish I was more like that.
No, I don't mind doing a little search. Because to me, it's like, I don't have, like, normal TV. Like, I only have streaming. And so it's the same thing for me as, like channel surfing, which, I find a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, when your food is super hot, you're, like, not really eating it anyway. And so I'm, you know, sometimes I take a moment to do that. But, like, last night, I knew what I was going to watch, so I just turned
just
that on.
Immediate. Okay, yeah.
Unacceptable behavior. It's okay. Sorry. There's nothing that makes me more mad than when my wife and I are about to watch a movie and we get our food and we're going to watch the movie and then I'm just sitting there clicking through it instead of eating my food.
Yeah.
It drives me insane.
I know.
Insane.
I get it. I'm the same way.
And she's sitting there eating peacefully like, ooh, I like that one. And I'm just sitting there with the...
And you're like, I can't eat until I pick it out.
Exactly.
It's
different because I'm on it. I can only blame myself.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Like, if I haven't chosen yet, it's because I haven't chosen. Not because I'm waiting for, not because I have to make an agreement with somebody else to choose something.
I think the true part that's infuriating is just seeing someone else happily eating.
Right.
While you're fighting for your life.
But I'm sitting there just...
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I don't even know what the buttons do anymore because I'm just clicking around.
You're carrying the family on your back when you're doing that.
That's right. Yeah. Doing the important work. Yeah.
And with that, I'm going to call it for our global text mom. So if you're anything on here that piqued your interest, head over to our website and make your way to the podcast section. We'll have notes on today's episode. That include links to all our good stuff.
And we have podcast transcripts available. You can find them in our show notes as well as on podscribe.com. Just search TechSmall.
And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, and Stitcher. And of course, we would love a rate and review. 5 stars, please.
Please. Thank you. That's all for today, folks. Thank you for listening to this global episode of TechSmall. Everyone, say bye.
Bye. Bye.